items at home. Things were still difficult for him,
but he at least had begun crafting again, and that seemed to take his mind off the stresses of money and saving face. Her mother was still as carefree as ever, though, even with her crippled Dantian. A part of Fia wondered if her mother was in some sort of denial, or perhaps, like her, had other things that had taken priority now. She would perhaps come to pay a visit later to see little Su Ling. Fia herself would see Su Ling shortly to start her daily lessons, which was much easier now that she lived so close. Since moving from her villa in the Imperial City to relocate to Max's apartment, Fia found she had a newfound sense of peace and freedom in all things. Even though she lived apart from her mother and father in the Imperial City, being this much further away gave her a distance from the toils and trials of everyday life. Although she did feel somewhat guilty for it. Moving out of the villa had had another purpose than just distancing herself from the upper echelons of society. Her father had now rented it to another family as a form of income. It saddened her a bit when she thought of it in those terms, but she was also happy that her sacrifice could do some good for the family. Fia readily gave up the villa when her father had asked. Granted, he had expected her to move back home and not here to Max's apartment, but just the feeling of being amongst Max's family and belongings curbed her longing for him. But there was another, more important reason for wanting to move. Fia closed her eyes and cycled her chi. It had only been 2 weeks, but already she could sense a difference in her body. And the slightest change in her flow of chi as it made its way through her meridians and into her dantian. It was still just an inkling, but she knew it was there. The faintest hint of a new life within her. She smiled at the thought. It was selfish, she knew, and she prayed that Max had somehow forgiven her by now. But the idea of having his child filled her with so much joy. She prayed for his safety and for his return. 3 years. She still didn't know how she would manage it, especially now. A small part of her hoped that by moving away she could somehow keep it all a secret, at least for now. Fia sighed. It would at least be months before she would truly need to make changes for people not to notice. Until then, she had the solace of knowing that Max would always be a part of her. No matter what. Princess Lunala felt her stomach lurch as she read the report.
757,132 spirit stones,
she said as she glared at the numbers.
Is this correct?
Lunala shifted upon her throne within her royal audience chamber, her cabinet members assembled before her. She waited for her Minister of Commerce, Hui Long, to answer. The tan-skinned Darmian did so slowly, as if already sensing her wrath.
The number is accurate, Your Majesty,
Hui Long said in his frail voice.
I double-checked the figures myself. Every expenditure was accounted for with the utmost detail. You can see a breakdown of the various costs on pages 3 to 16.
She swiped her finger across her tablet aggressively, infuriated by the staggering amounts of items she saw.
What's this? 42,000 spirit stones for cleaning services?
That was the accumulation of all the cleaning for every arena across the planet, Your Majesty. It is not a large sum, considering the amount of work involved, and procurement was overseen by each warden personally.
It's too much,
she said.
And what is this? Skiff transportation for 178,000 spirit stones?
The barge skiffs for the finals of the Jade Tournament matches, Your Majesty. The cost includes their construction as well as transport to and from the desert arena each day. It was a month-long tournament, I remind you.
Lunala felt sick to her stomach again.
Why wasn't I advised the costs were climbing so high?
1,000 apologies,
Hui Long said with an obsequious bow.
This one perhaps failed to emphasize the points when they were reported to you each month during our cabinet briefs on the tournament preparations. I believe your exact instructions were, whatever it takes to be successful, Your Majesty.
Her anger flared. The old man was being cheeky with her, but she did recall making such a comment more than once before.
No matter. Tell us of the return. Surely this was a good investment.
There was no direct return on investment,
Huilong said.
The fees collected from visitors to the event totaled only 193,476 spirit stones. This leaves the total return for the tournament at a negative 563,656 spirit stones.
Lunala nearly dropped her tablet.
A loss! You allowed us to suffer such a great loss!
But Your Majesty, this was never foreseen to be a profitable event,
Huilong said.
I advised as such from the start. The return will come in the form of increased visitors from the core worlds. If you recall, you place greater emphasis on this than even continuing work on the Omni Gate, which we stalled for a year.
Curse the old man in his memory,
she thought. Still, she would not lose face in front of her own cabinet.
And what increase in visitors have we recorded since the event?
Huilong paused as he consulted his own tablet.
For the last few months, we have indeed seen an uptick in arrivals. A solid 1.2% increase on average.
1.2%? Is that all?
It is the equivalent to some 40,000 additional spirit stones a year, Your Majesty. If the rate sustains, the event will have paid itself back in only 14 years.
14 years,
Lunala thought. That was longer than her world had even been established. The entire event was a damn failure. If word ever got out, her embarrassment within the lower courts would be too much to bear.
These figures must never be published, understood?
Lunala said.
Anywhere!
Huilong bowed.
As you wish, Your Majesty.
What is the state of the treasury now?
She asked.
We are in quite poor stead, Huilong
said.
Down to less than 200,000 spirit stones.
Her stomach lurched again.
What? How much exactly?
168,000, Your Majesty, Huilong
said.
We may now wish to consider freezing other public services along with the Omni Gate to ensure we do not go bankrupt this year.
Her heart was pounding.
No, that will be a sign of weakness. No one must know that the Treasury is in such a state. We must increase the export of monster cores and cultivation materials to the core worlds. What of the handless stations? We must accelerate their production.
Their production is linked to the visitor arrivals, Your Majesty,
Huilong said.
They are at maximum productivity already.
Lunala grimaced.
Then use the army. Send our own forces into the wild to slay spirit beasts.
Your Majesty,
Shi Lu, the defense minister, interjected, his deep baritone voice drawing her attention.
I would not advise that. The cost to mobilize troops for such a venture would surely cost more than the materials would be worth. And not to mention the losses of the troops themselves. Standard soldiers are Foundation and low-tier core realm at best. They would not fare well against the A and S-class monsters needed to harvest cores.
Yes, there are expected to be losses. But what do you mean there would be additional cost?
Lunala said.
Don't we pay them now anyway?
Yes, for defense, Your Majesty, Shi Lu said. To suppress an attack should a barrier fail. And yes, we would expect and accept such losses. But to do so willingly...
He didn't finish his sentence, as well he shouldn't. Her ire was piqued.
I agree with Minister Shi Lu, Huilong
said.
The export industry works because the labor and risk is paid for by the adventurous cultivators themselves. If we were to take that risk on directly, there is no way it would be profitable.
Lunala's hands balled into fists.
Are you to tell me none of you have a viable solution?
Her anger flared as they looked at one another like hapless children.
None of you!
I may have a solution, Your Majesty.
All eyes turned to her aide, Ling Wei, who had spoken from her side. It wasn't common for Ling Wei to have a voice in cabinet meetings, but in this case, she would allow it, if not just to curb her ire.
Go on, Ling Wei. Of what solution do you speak?
Ling Wei bowed.
Your Majesty is well aware that the Imperial compensation for our tribute will net some 20,000 spirit stones this...
A paltry sum, Lunala said. We have lost many times that. Were you not paying attention, Ling Wei?
Indeed we have, Your Majesty,
Ling Wei said with another bow.
But if your tribute is to be as successful as we all hope, then the compensation can be much higher.
She raised a brow.
Higher? How?
It depends on how many survive a tour, but 1 billion spirit stones is split as compensation among the home planets of the veteran survivors. Like I said, if you have faith that our tribute will survive a tour, then the return of compensation could be high indeed. It is not unheard of for a team of 10 to return with only 3 or 4.
Lunala's mind cranked as a smile spread across her lips.
How much better prospect indeed,
she said.
Far more guaranteed than this tenement nonsense that these luck came up with.
Her cabinet gasped and looked at her with disparaging eyes, but they dared not question her words. She had laid the blame for the tournament's failure, and her word was final. No more would be said.
Prepare another letter to the tribute, Lunala said. The Iron Bull must know his objective when the time comes.
She smiled as she felt the stars aligning. Surely this was confirmation that the Iron Bull would not only return home successful under his own strength, but that he was destined to be hers as well. The station of a prince consort would be the perfect reward for saving the royal treasury.
Ensure he gets the message quickly,
she said.
Far more is riding on his success than he even knows.
In the darkness, it stirred. A shift it sensed. Through the apertures, it could no longer sense the husk of the cursed flame. Had it been quelled? Had it been destroyed? It knew not, but surely only one as powerful as it could have achieved such a thing. Its search for its own husk, it would continue. A vessel worthy of the divine stars. But wait. Through the apertures did it still sense a husk of the flame? Not the same. Smaller. Weaker. It gathered its focus, extending its influence through the apertures. Any progeny of the cursed flame needed to be extinguished, and now, while it was away from the other, would be the optimal time. Chapter 10
2 minutes!
The shout of warning came from Jakra, who was standing in the center aisleway of the jostling prison skiff as it descended rapidly from orbit. I was seated alongside my fellow prisoner tributes in chairs equipped with shackles for the ankles and arms. If this thing decided to crash, we'd all be royally screwed. Unlike the fancy skiff I had taken from the surface of the Earth, the prisoner skiff was a tin can with no windows. Only the creak of metal and the hurricane-like gusts of wind banging against the hull gave any sense that we were descending at all. Kal Ren and his family were seated in the row next to me, their heads down between their knees. In the last few days, I had gotten to know the man and his family a bit better, but for all that was good in the universe, I now wish that I hadn't. It only made what was likely to come that much worse to bear. Kal Ren seemed oblivious to it all, though, turning his head to give me a smile.
Never done anything like this before, he said. Who would have thought that me, a poor farmer, would be in a skiff falling from the stars, eh? He laughed, full of nerves, and I smiled good-naturedly in response. What do you think should be our strategy, Iron Bull? Should we try to befriend tributes from the other colony worlds and form alliances? I got no idea, I said honestly. But if this academy is run anything like a sect, I wouldn't expect teamwork to be a cherished principle. The skiff suddenly lurched, sending my stomach flying into my throat with negative G's. A few of the tributes screamed, including Kal Ren and his family. We were then slammed down into our seats again in a wild roller coaster-like fashion. Kal Ren recovered from his fright with another smile.
Ah, yes, you would know, he said. I never would have thought I'd be a part of a martial sect either. Yet here I am, I suppose.
I looked about. The fear inside the craft was palpable. We were headed into the unknown, and these people were all beyond ill-equipped. I glanced down the row to his wife and children. Su Ren looked like she was praying, while his sons were wearing grimaces of stress and worry. Make sure you keep your family together, I said. Think of them as your team and no one else. I then glanced about at the other 24 or so occupants of the skiff, Kal Ren's neighbors and former friends. I wouldn't expect them to react any better than your countrymen here. It was true. They hated his guts and still blamed him for everything.
Get ready! Jakra shouted. On your feet!
The shackles and manacles released, and in a flurry of activity, the entire occupancy of the skiff tried to stand amidst the jostling and careening vessel. It then seemed to settle down as the craft decelerated hard, and it felt like my weight nearly tripled. I resisted the force with a flexing of my legs, but a few of the tributes fell right back into their chairs again, including Su Ren. The doors to the craft opened, and a hot wind blew inside, accompanied by the dull orange glow of fading sunlight. Jakra then stood to the front of the craft and began pushing tributes outside.
Go! Go! Go!
A prison guard who was seated to our rear began pushing us from behind as we filed into the aisleway. The fear inside Kal Ren and his family suddenly spiked as they approached the exit way and glancing over their heads. I saw why. Standing before them was a 20 or 30 foot drop to a rocky surface below. Su Ren hesitated, gasping as she tried to turn back, but Jakra shoved her and the entire family out the opening with a single push. They flew outside with a cacophony of screams that ended with sharp cries and grunts from below. Before I could even look to see what had become of them, Jakra thrusted my sword and axe into my arms.
Good luck, Iron Bull, he said, and then hefted me out the hatch as well. Son of a...
The short fall came much quicker than I expected, and when my feet hit the ground, it felt like I had a 10-ton weight on my back. I spilled into a roll, breaking my fall, and then popped back onto my feet again, just as the prison skiff pulled away overhead, filling the air with hot dust and backwash. As it cleared, a mind-numbing sight came into view. We weren't the only ones being pushed out of a skiff. No less than 12 orbital crafts were spilling tributes onto the rocky ground from 30 feet in the air. Some were clearly true martial cultivators who absorbed the fall no problem, like I had. More of them, though, seemed to be mortals who wailed and cried as they hit the ground. They had to be close to 1,000 people altogether, but the one thing we all had in common were our gray uniforms and the word tribute written in red characters on the back. I looked for Kal Ren and his family and found them gathered around Su Ren, who was mewling on the ground in pain. As I walked to them, a heaviness hit me, like my entire body was made of lead.
What the hell?
It was then that I noticed the distress on Kal Ren's face, along with his sons.
I can barely stand,
the eldest son, Chu Ren, said.
This world must be cursed.
Help me with your mother, Kal Ren said. She's broken her ankles.
His sons helped their mother to stand while I looked for my weapons that had fallen out of my grasp. When I collected my phalanx glaive from the ground, it felt like it weighed twice that of normal, and the same one from my axe. I then went to help Kal Ren and his family, who were hissing in pain with each step. I looked about and saw many of the other people struggling just to stand and walk. The gravity on this planet had to be jacked right up. We made our way toward where the other tributes seemed to be gathered as more and more orbital skiffs pulled away. I then noticed there was one skiff that did not. It was a normal skiff with no canopy and was hovering above the epicenter of the crowd. On it were four figures, each dressed in different colored robes. Two were wearing black, with one of them, a woman, having the addition of jade trim. The last two men were wearing brown and white, respectively. As the other orbital shuttles left and cleared the area, the woman wearing black and jade took a step forward on the skiff and rested her hands on her hips as she surveyed the crowd. She looked in her 40s and reminded me a lot of the warden back home. Not in appearance, mind you. Where the Lady Silvertear had the refinement and beauty of a royal, this woman had a battle-hardened look to her, and she wasn't Yi either. She was brown-skinned like Jian Yi, and had her head shaved bald, and while her face wasn't unattractive, it did have a few scars. But what resembled the warden was her stare. It was cold and calculating, almost predatory.
"Listen, the lot of you!" she shouted, and her voice boomed over the crowd with the unnatural power of chi. "This one is known as Yora, chief instructor responsible for tribute training. From this point on, you will address me only as chief instructor."
She then paused to look out over the crowd again, as if to let her words sink in.
"Many of you are weak," she continued. "And before the sun of this world sets, you will know if you are too weak to continue past the close of this day. Some of you may have noticed that the planet Lungzet is a heavy world. Your weight here and that of everything around you may be several times what you may be accustomed to on your home world. That alone may kill some of you before the day is out. Some indeed may have even died from it already, being dropped from your skiffs."
As she said it, I immediately looked to Su Ren, who was still wincing in pain between her two sons, who were holding her aloft. It made my blood boil to realize they'd perhaps done it all on purpose, dropped us from 30 feet up just to thin out the herd.
"If you are still fit enough to run, then you may have the strength to complete your first assignment as a tribute."
She then pointed behind her.
"In that direction, some 20 miles away, is the Legionnaires' Academy of Du Gok Bong. If you manage to reach there alive, then you will have earned your colors to become a first-year tribute."
Chief Instructor Yora then pointed to the man in brown robes.
"You will shed your gray robes as prisoner tributes and wear brown, the color of misfortune and shit. If you manage to survive further through your first year and pass the requirements to reach the second year, then you will be elevated to a white robe tribute and wear the colors of death and mourning. Should you then survive and meet the requirements of a third year, you will wear black, the colors of darkness and glory, a true tribute. Only then will you choose a path, either follow that of a phalanx for those of you who are of low cultivation realm, or that of legionnaire, if you have true strength and talent. Should you succeed in your legionnaire assessment, then your black robes will be adorned with a white stripe, signifying you as a graduate legionnaire. From that point, you will be sent on a tour of duty to suppress the hell worlds of the cursed stars. If you survive and return successful, you will be dubbed a true legionnaire and wear the jade trim of vitality and dependability as I do now."
That got a murmur from the crowd as we all realized the power of the woman who now spoke to us. She'd done exactly what I needed to do. She'd seen and survived what I still had to reach, much less experience. But something she said caused a pit to form in my stomach. Had I been black-robed already just by being a volunteer? That thought made me sick. K Killing that bastard Shane Liu had cost me far more than I thought. Shit, I muttered.
What is it?
Kaoren asked. Nothing, I said, but my mind was already whirling as to what I needed to do to make up for lost time. I had only 9 months to achieve everything she'd said, but clearly the color progression was meant for near-mortals whose final end might be a phalanx and not the stars. I needed to get back to being a black robe fast just so I could begin my training to be a legionnaire. The thought caused a burning of my flame, but the struggler came to dampen it as he drew my eyes to Kaoren and his family. Damn it. I'd made a promise to them as well. But how the hell was I going to advance quickly while trying to keep them all alive?
Remember these colors and what they signify, Chief Instructor Yora said. If you are strong and fortunate enough to make it to the academy, then you will see them all. Be certain to show respect to those who are your upperclassmen and superiors. There is only one ranked higher than the colors you see me wearing now. That will be of the Academy President, Master Su Li Zhen. He wears not only the gold trim of an Imperial Marshal, one having served 3 successful tours as a Legionnaire, but the additional purple trim of nobility for one having served an additional 2 tours, earning the rank of High Marshal. Should you survive this first tribulation as a prisoner tribute, you will have the honor of being addressed by the High Marshal himself at the first assembly. The path ahead of you will not be easy, but with ha-
Her words cut short as a sudden cry filled the air. The entire assembly then turned in the direction of the scream to see a lone tribute a couple hundred feet away, running for his life from what looked like a praying mantis the size of a giraffe. The creature easily outpaced him on its long, spindly legs, moving in unnervingly quick and jerky steps. It stabbed the man through his torso with one of them pinning him to the ground. His cries became ear-piercing screams of terror as the mantis lowered its huge insectoid head to the man's face. And then with a loud crack, it snapped its jaws closed, popping the man's skull like a ripe watermelon. The screams ceased. The giant mantis feasted for a moment on what was left of the man's head, and then after piercing his body with both forelimbs, the mantis began digging into the earth with its hindquarters. It took less than a half a minute for the huge monster to burrow itself into the ground and drag the tribute's body with it. A cold silence filled the air as fear permeated everyone's soul. I had never seen a creature like that before, and had no idea how strong it was. But judging by how quickly the man had died, I would put it as a C-class at least. But then again, this was a heavy world. Maybe it was stronger than even that to live under the intense gravity alone. Maybe it was the equivalent of a B-class in my books. Chief Instructor Yora let out a scoffing laugh that echoed over the crowd.
It seems one of your fellow tributes attempted to gain a head start. Both ambitious and cunning. Qualities to be admired for certain, but as he most graciously allowed to be demonstrated, the Academy of Dugokbong is called so for a reason. You are here to learn as much as you are to advance and grow in strength, and your first lesson should always be this. Ensure you understand fully the directions of your instructor.
She paused for a smile that more resembled a shit-eating grin.
Would that eager tribute have waited but a moment more? I would have explained that Lung Zept is a penal colony and was chosen to be so for 3 reasons. The first is it being a heavy world, as I already explained. The second is that this world is filled with very powerful monsters and spirit beasts. The creature you saw, known as a Taklid, is the predominant species that live in large colonies below the ground. While nocturnal, they are attracted by sound and vibration during the day and act as ambush predators. Like what happened with that tribute there, it is likely a large number of Taklids gather below you, even now.
That caused the fear to spike to 12 as murmurs of despair and alarm wafted through the crowd.
The only thing protecting you right now is the small barrier being produced by this.
Yora then raised a familiar-looking crystal in her hand the size of a softball. It was cut crudely and amber in color, but there was no denying what it was.
This is known as aetherite. It is the material we harvest from the hell worlds of the cursed stars. Its concentrated chi harmonics repel spirit beasts and monsters, even demons. Its value is worth 1,000 times its weight in spirit stones. Once we leave, you will have to travel the 20 miles to Dugokbong and defend yourself against the attacks of the monsters here.
The murmurs broke into an outright din of panic and alarm.
This is far worse than I thought,
Kao Ren said, looking to me.
Master Iron Bull, please protect my family!
And he wasn't the only one. Kao Ren's former friends and sectmates all bum-rushed me, begging for me to protect them.
Master Iron Bull, please escort us! I can't die like this!
Kao Ren, you've doomed us all!
I was just about to tell them all to back off when Yora shouted again,
Silence!
Her words crushed the noise until you could hear a pin drop.
There is a final reason this planet was chosen as a penal colony,
she said.
It is also the reason why you must reach Dugokbong before nightfall.
She then looked to the orange-hued sky.
This planet is cursed by a blood moon. When it rises, its demonic chi will influence the Thakrids that will emerge from below, making them even stronger and more ferocious. Not only that, but the demons that slumber beneath this world's crust will surface as well. Few cultivators, save for graduate legionnaires, can withstand the influence of a blood moon, and even then, not for very long. If you wish to survive, get to Dugokbong before nightfall, where there is the safety of an aetherite core.
The uncertainty and panic resumed as the skiff powered up and began to redirect toward the direction of the academy.
You have roughly 4 hours, Yora said. This is your first assignment as tributes. I wish you luck.
With that, the skiff turned fully and began to pull away. Desperate cries rang out as people tried to run after it. But then there came another sound as the ground began to tremble beneath our feet, rocks and stone breaking. The world then exploded into a shower of sand and debris as at least half a dozen Thakrids burst free from the ground around us. Chapter 11. My frenzy spiked as the odds against me surged. I was on an alien world with alien monsters attacking a crowd full of people and a family I had sworn to protect. The demon wanted to let it all hang out and just sink its teeth into the flesh of unfamiliar prey, but the struggler knew there were other priorities. "Keep behind me!" I shouted to Kao Ren and his family. I readied my glaive and axe, cycling my frenzy to imbue my body with steel skin. I took quick assessment of the chaos erupting around me. One of the Thakrids was already being fended off by what appeared to be a group of mid-tier cultivators. The 4 other monsters were attacking the rest of the tributes en masse, like sharks shredding a bait ball. No time to lose! I launched into the air with a scream, charging my weapons with frenzied lightning. Bringing my axe and glaive down heavily upon the thorax of the closest Thakrid, it felt like I was striking a steel wall. The force of my hit was still enough to crack its armor, though, and green goop sprayed from its hard, chitinous exoskeleton that I could now see was at least 3 inches thick. I wasted no time leaping back at it for another strike, but with its attention drawn, it turned and stabbed me right out of the air with one of its spindly forelimbs. A grunt of pain escaped my clenched teeth as the spear-like tip punctured straight through my steel skin and into my shoulder. My back hit the ground as it pinned me down, and I had a flashback to that poor guy getting his head bitten off. What the hell? Were these things so strong on this planet that I was going out the same way as some mortal? Nah, to hell with that. I was a cultivator.
No, I was a damn berserker. My infuriation and rage combined to light a righteous indignation of defiance in my heart. My flame surged with frenzy, and I channeled every ounce of it into my strength as I gripped the spindly limb piercing my shoulder. Using both hands, I pulled hard in opposite directions, grunting with exertion. It felt like I was trying to break concrete, but then with another primal yell, the exoskeleton gave way like a crab leg being snapped, and the giraffe-sized beast lurched away from me, spewing green blood from its broken limb. I didn't bother to remove the tip of its leg from my shoulder as I went on the counter-offensive. I'd played this all wrong from the start. My twin axe and glaive technique was for fighting other cultivators, not monsters. I stowed my axe on my back and gripped my phalanx glaive in both hands. I'd slain hundreds of monsters in the wild to strengthen Vanya with this style, and now I needed to use it to the fullest to kill all these things. I had attacked the Tokrit as if it were a C or B-class monster, but clearly these things were the equivalent of an A or S-class even. Maybe I'd been a big fish in a small pond all along. But no matter. I had the power of rage on my side. I needed to go old school, like back when I was weak. Back when every hit needed my all. When every hit had to count. When every hit had to kill. I flew upwards with a battle cry, channeling every chunk of solid frenzy into my next swing. Lightning flashed with a thunderous boom as the glaive cut clean through one of the attacker's massive leg joints. My lust for battle surged, and I went in for another one-chop cleave, taking off two legs at once. As the beast fell and toppled over, its chitinous jaws clacked and squeaked, and I spun with a somersault to deliver an overhead killing blow that silenced the creature by removing its head. I had scarce time to cultivate all the frenzy flowing from my flame, but I did so quickly to replenish everything I had dished out to slay the Tokrit, and it had been a hell of a lot, too. In the time it had taken me to kill it, though, I saw that the other four had sliced through nearly half the crowd. Bodies and limbs lay severed on the ground. Blood flowed as screams filled the air. I looked for Kal Ren, but couldn't find him in the din. Shit, I thought. If I didn't act fast, all these people were going to die. I couldn't hold back any longer. If I didn't up my game, it was going to be game over. Cycling my frenzy, I surged with Mark of the Giant, holding back the throttle only slightly to remain just above my normal size. Hopefully not too many people would notice in the fray, but it was more than enough to equalize the heightened gravity pulling against my bones. I cleaved into another Tokrit with my newfound strength, just as it was about to devour a woman caught between its limbs. I took its huge bulbous abdomen right off in a single cleave. Heck yeah! I backflipped with my martial forms as it retaliated with a swipe of its legs, its insectoid brain still controlling its body sands, its vital organs somehow. I flew back at it with another surge of frenzy, and finally ended its life in full for good with a follow-up strike to its head and thorax. I looked for my next target and pushed through the fleeing crowd to get to the last three. Luckily, one of them already looked partially subdued by a group of 10 or so cultivators who were peppering it with elemental chi techniques. I changed direction and went for the last two. They were involved in a sparring match of their own, fighting over a pile of fresh corpses that had to be comprised of some 30 people or more. My stomach lurched at the sight, but the thought of these things killing more people spurned me on. I dug deep within my frenzy reserves to lay into the closest of the giant insects with a series of glaive strikes, spinning and hacking to spew green blood. I was so engrossed in my handiwork that I didn't see the other Tokrit lurch at me until it already had snared my leg within its jaws. I cried out in white-hot pain as the force of its bite threatened to cut through my steel skin and take my leg with it. There wasn't as much pressure as when the first one had pierced me before, but it was damn near close enough. I cultivated the frenzy from my pain to fight back and erupted with a burst of frenzied lightning. Wrath of 1,000 slain souls! The lightning shocked the creature away from me, and I used the time to both recover and finish the other one off before it got any ideas. I then turned about to see the last Tokrit still recovering from my lightning hit, convulsing and jittering. Limping, I closed the distance to it and then summoned my frenzy to dispatch it quickly before it could recover. Three long chop! My glaive cleaved straight through the creature's insectoid-like head, and its convulsion stopped instantly.
A sudden weakness overcame me after landing the killing blow, like I had just run a marathon or something. My breathing was ragged, my skin bathed in green goop, blood, and sweat. It was then that I realized that I was throwing around twice my weight now, burning frenzy like crazy. I finally pulled the tip of the tacrid leg from my shoulder, wincing with the pain. Dropping it to the ground, I then noticed that all the violence had ceased. I looked for the final tacrid the other cultivators had engaged, but didn't see it anymore. What I did see, however, was a small crowd of tributes gathering around me. They all gawked with wide-eyed stares while their souls spewed lemonade. Murmurs and mumbles came next.
You see the size of that son of a bitch?
He killed four of those things by himself? It took 10 of us to kill one.
Big deal. The bastard had weapons. We didn't. How'd he get him?
He was a free tribute.
He volunteered for this shit.
Must be high-tier coal realm at least.
The speculative banter continued, and I realized the group before me had to be the same guys who dispatched the other Tacrit. A group of more familiar faces then popped out of the crowd, and I was relieved to see Calren along with his family, all of them still alive and unscathed.
Master Iron Bull!
Calren shouted.
You saved our lives! You are the most powerful cultivator I've ever seen!
He turned about to face the masses.
Hear this! We who are still standing owe the Iron Bull our lives! He alone slew those beasts! Give him your gratitude!
Calren fell to his knees along with his family, prostrating himself with a kowtow. A good portion of the rest of the group did the same, which I now saw had been cut down from over 1,000 to what looked like less than 100. Holy shit, I thought. This world was brutal. The bodies of the slain lay in huge, bloodied piles. Most didn't seem to care, all prisoners perhaps, but a few who I recognized as fellow sect members from Cowran's town or village were crying inconsolably, perhaps having lost loved ones in the fray.
Like hell he killed them all,
a slim man with a stubbled beard and long hair said.
We killed one too, and with our bare hands. Ain't nothing special about a man who got weapons.
He spit on the ground as if to emphasize the fact. The bastard then stared at me, sizing me up, anger and resentment in his soul. But I didn't have time for such bullshit. My handler's senses were tingling. I ignored him with indifference as I turned to the rest of the crowd. We all need to clear out of here, I said. These bodies and blood will attract more predators. And trust me when I say this. I come from a world with a blood moon, and we all need to get to the academy before it rises. The same man scoffed.
What's this wee shit? It's every man for himself, jackass.
Yeah, and who the hell are you to tell us what we should do?
Another man said. He was thick and burly with dark skin and a shaved head, a white beard that was gnarled and braided into locks.
I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm done with taking orders. We're practically free now. You want to believe that dumb bitch and run to a damn prison for safety? Be my guest. Me? I'm finding a way off this rock.
He began walking away, and a few stragglers followed after him.
Wait! Calren shouted. We should all stick with the Iron Bull. Clearly he's strong enough to protect us. You've seen it for yourselves.
Murmurs of uncertainty and debate filled the air. I hadn't planned on becoming the leader of this mob, but damn it if Calren wasn't pushing me and everyone else in that direction. Heated conversations broke out, and a few more people left to follow the black guy with the beard. Then suddenly a voice shouted above the din.
You'll all die!
Everyone paused to stare at the woman with short-cropped blonde hair and blue eyes who had spoken. She was petite, with pale white skin, now flushed red from perhaps fighting the last Tacrid, considering she fit the build of a cultivator to a T with her toned arms that were on display in her sleeveless robe.
We have creatures like these back on my home world,
she said.
If you don't move fast enough and quietly enough, you'll pop a swarm like we did just now. If you want to survive, Your best bet is to move fast and alone.
She then paused and looked right at me.
Stay with these people and you'll die, Iron Bull.
With that said, the woman suddenly took off in a sprint, heading in the opposite direction of the bearded guy and towards the academy. A few more seconds passed before the asshole who sized me up took off as well. After this, it was a free-for-all, with tributes leaving in droves. Even some of Kao Ren's fellow townsmen left, following the crowd. After a few minutes, when I looked at who remained, there was only Kao Ren's family, along with perhaps a dozen more tributes who were either wounded or maimed. Son of a bitch, I thought. But then maybe I was expecting too much of them to band together for their fellow man. Most of these people were criminals, after all.
What are we going to do? Kao Ren asked.
What that woman said made sense to me,
Su Ren said, leaning on her husband's shoulder for support.
We need to move quickly so those things can't jump out of the ground to grab us.
But what about all these other people?
Kao Ren looked back to the dozen or so other tributes with us.
Some of them don't look able to walk.
I say we leave them,
the youngest son Lo Ren said, his dark eyes lowering as he looked over the wounded tributes with disdain.
They're all criminals anyway.
His callous statement took me by surprise. He definitely wasn't a chip off the old block, but he wasn't exactly wrong either. Still, the cultivator dog-eat-dog mindset of it all just rubbed me the wrong way. Would you do the same to your mother? I asked. He stared back at me, shocked, with his mouth open. I didn't wait for an answer, and instead went to work, doing the only thing I knew that could help. There was no way we could move at any kind of speed without making a ton of noise, and we needed to get moving quickly to beat the sun. We were bound to attract more Takrids, but there was a solution for that. On my world, my job was to escort cultivators through territory like this, I said. Avoiding large predators and spirit beasts was what I was trained to do. I found the giant abdomen of the Takrid I had cut clean off. Using my mark of the giant strength, I gripped the ends of its carapace and cracked it wide open like a peanut. Guts and foul-smelling offal burst free. I then rooted around in the nauseating stuff until I found what I was looking for. I didn't know these creatures, but there were plenty of insect-type monsters back home, and from my years of training as a handler, I knew how to avoid them. Finding what I was looking for, I raised a banana-shaped organ in the air for all of them to see. Insects communicate mostly by chemicals, I said. This organ is what produces them. It's going to be nasty, but if we smear this on us, it'll be our best chance to survive if another one of those things pops out of the ground to attack. I didn't have to speak twice. The tributes lined up in front of me as their souls oozed lemonade. I handed the organ to Kao Ren. You go first and then help the others. I'll get more sacks. I popped three more Takrid abdomens open to get the organs needed to cover the 16 people with me. Two of the tributes were missing limbs and already half dead, but I put a tourniquet on their wounds and after smearing them with Takrid gunk, threw them on my back.
Why do you care so much about these strangers?
Lo Ren said, frowning at me.
They would have likely left just like the others if they could.
It seemed a genuine question. A good one, too. Lo Ren and Chu Ren were near identical in appearance, both close to my age. Lo Ren maybe being a few years younger. They were everyday people, dark hair, cut short so as not to interfere with their working in the fields. Ordinary features. But that was where the similarities ended. Now I realize that Chu Ren and Lo Ren were like night and day. Chu Ren seemed much more like his father, a man of the people. Lo Ren seemed a man in it for himself. Maybe, I said, finally answering him. But leaving them here would make us no better. That seemed to stump him. Bring your mother to me. I'll carry her as well.
Three people?
He said. I was still pumping Mark of the Giant, and my increased frame size could handle the bulk if I placed them right. With Kaoren's help, I fit Su Ren on my back. The weight was enormous, especially with my weapons, and I found I had to spend a steady stream of frenzy just to stay upright. Luckily, there was enough lemonade in the air to help recoup some of it.
Wait!
Kao Ren said, holding up one of the Takrid sacks.
You forgot to use this on yourself, Master Iron Bull.
No, I said. I'm not wearing any. If worst comes to worst, I want to be able to lure those things away from you guys if I can. I still didn't know if I could even pull this off. The odds were against me, indeed. Kalren smiled as his eyes welled with tears.
You are truly an honorable soul, Master Ironbull,
Kalren said, giving me another bow of respect.
Somehow, be it in this life or the next, I will repay you for this great kindness.
Let's just worry about this life for now, I said with a grin. I found my bearings for the academy and then shouted to the rest of the crowd, Okay, let's move out. We've got 20 miles to cover, and that sun isn't going to wait for us to set. Chapter 12. My lungs burned with exertion as I wheezed in the hot desert air. That's what this place was, I decided. A damn desert. Not that it was all sand dunes and shit, but the flat terrain and minimal vegetation gave the impression that this place didn't see a lot of precipitation. What trees we did pass were either dead and withering or more like cactus. Small tufts of grass dotted the hard-packed earth in random patterns, the earth itself more resembling red clay. That reminded me of the arena. But at the rate we were going, I wondered if I'd ever see an arena again. We'd traveled only 3 or 4 miles to my estimation, less than a quarter of the way, and had burned close to an hour already. I was jogging at a slow trot to keep the pace up, and with 3 people on my back, plus my weapons, the exertion was intense. If I were back on Earth, this would have been a breeze, and it had me wondering if there was more than just gravity at play here. Regardless, I was appreciative of the workout and was actively cultivating all the frenzy I had generated fighting the Tacrids to heighten my muscle strengthening and body hardening. I was already at stage 10 in both, but clearly there were a lot tougher things in the universe than me, and those Tacrids had proved it. I would need to get much tougher at a base level to survive this place and beyond. I wasn't sure if I needed to get to the next breakthrough and ascend to the Sacred Soul Realm in order to gain new stages of body refinement or not, but I didn't care. I was doing it anyway. As Threya had taught me, even the Shuras were but a guide. My flame was telling me I was too weak for this new world, and I was adjusting myself accordingly. I turned about briefly to see the tail of our caravan extending into the distance. Shit, I cursed inwardly. Some of them were lagging back near a quarter mile, but I couldn't fault them. If I was struggling under this heavy world, I could only imagine what they were feeling. I waited until I found a bit of shade under a copse of dead trees before halting and lowering Su Ren and the other 2 tributes from my back. Kalren and his sons, who had kept pace with me, staggered to the dead trees like shipwrecked men seeing an island. They collapsed in heaps, panting heavily, but even sitting seemed to give them little relief.
Master Ironbull,
Su Ren said softly, drawing my attention to her, and she frailly pointed to the 2 tributes I'd laid down next to her.
I don't think either of them are breathing anymore.
Before I could even confirm, Lo Ren let out a scoff.
See? A waste of time bringing them, and to have my mother tethered to a couple of corpses.
Silence, Lo Ren!
His mother chided him.
You shame us!
Shame!
He shouted.
What does shame matter here? We are all dead already!
A resounding smack filled the air as Chu Ren slapped his younger brother across the face.
Stop it!
Chu Ren said.
Always complaining. You see anyone else?
His words cut short as Lo Ren pounced on top of him, and the 2 brothers fell to the ground in a scuffle. Kao Ren rushed to break them up while Su Ren shouted for them to stop. I was just about to intervene myself when the ground rumbled beneath us. In less than a second, the 10-colored carapace of a Tacrid emerged from the ground in a burst of earth and sand not more than 20 feet away. Kalren and his family screamed, but I yelled above them, Everyone shut up and don't move! Silence fell as the towering monster pulled itself free from its burrow. I held my breath and prayed my handler instincts would prove right. The Tacrid edged forward on its spindly legs towards where Su Ren was lying with the 2 corpses. It lowered its insectoid head towards them, turning it from side to side. But it didn't attack. It was confused. But perhaps it wouldn't be for long. Reaching for my glaive, I cycled my frenzy and then ran in a sprint in front of the Tacrid. The monster swiveled his head towards me and immediately gave chase. I poured on the speed to increase the distance between myself and Cowran's family, and then pulled a quick reversal to face the creature head-on. With its lumbering momentum, it had no time to stop, and I used the opportunity to leap from the ground with a lightning-charged upward slash. I cut through both its front legs, causing the insect to crash into the ground, and then followed up with a spinning chop to its head to quickly put it down. I breathed a sigh of relief. My ploy had indeed worked. Thank goodness some rules of the universe were truly universal. I stowed my blade and headed back to Cowran. All of them were staring at me wide-eyed in silence as if traumatized. The lemonade they exuded expressed their appreciation well enough, though, and I welcomed it to replenish my reserves. "I suggest no more fighting," I said.
"It was his damn fault,"
Loren hissed in a whisper at his older brother. Chu Ren glared back at him but didn't say anything.
"Enough of that,"
Cao Ren said.
"The Iron Bull has spared this family yet again. We should be grateful."
He then turned to me with a bow.
"Forgive my sons, Master."
"Yes, forgive them, please, Master Iron Bull,"
Su Ren said, lowering her head to the ground. I sighed. "Yeah, no worries." I glanced up at the sun. It was already starting to turn from yellow to orange. Most of the true cultivators had perhaps already long arrived at the academy. If we didn't up our speed fast, it wouldn't matter if we stayed quiet enough to prevent another Takrat attack. The Blood Moon was on the way. "We need to switch up the game plan," I said. "I can still carry three of you, but one of you will need to run with me."
"I say he should run,"
Chu Ren said, jerking a thumb at his brother. I coughed out a laugh. "You both will, in turns. Run as fast as you can until you tire, and then I'll swap you out."
"That sounds like a plan," Cao Ren said. "You both could cultivate while you ride on Master Iron Bull's back to regain your stamina."
"The world's chi is strange," Lo Ren said. "It's dense but sparse. Hard to find. Like nothing is even here."
"Yes, I sense that too,"
Su Ren said with a nod.
"Do you sense the same as well, Master Iron Bull?"
I couldn't sense jack shit when it came to chi, but I couldn't let them know that. "Doesn't matter," I said. "We'll get there regardless."
"Are we going to wait for the others to catch up?"
Cao Ren asked. Lo Ren immediately let out a frustrated sigh.
"Hush, Lo Ren,"
his father snapped. I looked back and saw that the next closest group still hadn't gotten any further, perhaps resting as we were. I then looked down at the bodies of the two dead tributes I'd been carrying. As much as the struggler wanted to protect, the facts were staring me dead in the face. Literally. "No," I said. "Lo Ren is right. We can't save everyone. But I did promise to save your family." I grabbed Su Ren from the ground and hoisted her onto my back, along with Cao Ren and Chu Ren. I then looked at Lo Ren. "Run as hard and fast as you can. And if one of those things pops out, just run even faster." To my surprise, he gave me a nod and even a little lemonade. We then got underway and left the rest of the tributes behind to die. More evidence of death emerged the further we progressed. Patches of blood, holes in the earth where Takrid must have emerged and snatched a tribute away. They became more and more frequent after we passed the halfway mark, where some of the weaker tributes had perhaps run out of steam. By that time, both Chu Ren and Lo Ren were running on fumes themselves, each one only able to last 5 minutes before needing a break.
"Water,"
Chu Ren said, resting his hands on his knees, panting.
"We need water."
I myself was parched as hell, but was running death's door to bypass my bodily needs to keep running at a steady pace.
"The bastards left us here to die," Lo Ren said. "How do we even know this is the right direction?"
"What other direction can we go?"
Su Ren said, who was now taking a break from the constant jostling on my back by sitting on the ground as well.
"It's where the woman pointed."
"I was hoping we would at least be able to see her by now,"
Cao Ren said, peering into the fading blood-orange sun that was rapidly sinking towards the horizon. I gauged the time. We had perhaps less than an hour left. "It's all part of the test," I said with struggler's resolve. "Don't lose hope now. We've come this far. Less than a quarter of the way left to go. We can make it if we push hard now." That got their spirits up, and after a few more precious minutes of rest, we set off again. We passed by more grisly sights of carnage as we pressed on, some with body parts and tribute uniforms strewn across the ground. A few times we even caused the earth to open up behind us as a Tacrid surfaced, but at the speed we were moving, we were long gone before it could fully emerge. It was working. I was actually going to save these people. The hope in my heart spurred me on as I swapped out Chu Ren and Lo Ren for what I hoped was the last time. I could just about see a towering structure in the distance when Cao Ren suddenly called out from my back,
"Iron Bull, stop!"
I did so, even though I had no idea why. "What's wrong?" I realized then that I was at the bottom of a small rise that Cao Ren could see over due to being on my back. As I climbed the hill for myself, my heart dropped at what I saw. No less than a dozen Tacrids were spilling out of a hole and feasting on a group of 20 or so corpses.
"By the heavens," Su Ren said. "How do we get by?"
"Trust the bug guts," I said as I sensed for the direction of the wind. It was headed straight at us, coming from the direction we needed to go. "We'll bank to the right of them, moving slow. They shouldn't be able to smell us until we're already past."
"So long as it's walking," Lo Ren said, already out of breath. "I don't think I can run much more."
"Let me run then," Cao Ren said. "I'm not as fast, but I'm at least well rested. Son, climb on here."
Before I could say anything, Cao Ren and Lo Ren traded places on my back. No matter, I thought. We were on the home stretch now. I started making the wide arc around the scene of carnage while Cao Ren walked by my side. I glanced up at the darkening sky at the same time. I could make it to that tower if I had a clean run for it, assuming Cao Ren could keep up. But we needed to get past the swarm of feasting Tacrids first. The sounds of ripping flesh and snapping bone were impossible to ignore, and more than once I could hear muffled gasps come from Su Ren as she quivered on my back. We got just about halfway when a new sound emerged. A slow hiss filled the air, and then grew in volume like a truck tire being rapidly deflated. I paused and looked in the direction of the sound that was coming from somewhere behind us, and then froze as a creature the size of a jumbo jet lifted its massive reptilian head into the air. It was a couple hundred feet away and looked like a monitor lizard or a Komodo dragon, perhaps, only 1,000 times the size. And that thing dwarfed any creature I'd ever seen before, except maybe those giant demons I'd seen on the hell plains of the moon. But this wasn't even a demon. It was a normal-ass monster. But it had to be this world's equivalent of an S-class at least. "Don't move," I whispered, and felt my flame rising to the challenge. The demon had to be out of his damn mind, but luckily the struggler still had a mission to accomplish. I had to get Cao Ren and his family to do Gokbong, and tackling this monster probably wouldn't be conducive for that. I wondered how the thing even snuck up on us, and then, as if to answer my question, it demonstrated its stealth by moving silently and slowly towards the feasting Tacrids. But although it moved slowly, with its immense size it covered a couple hundred feet in only two or three steps. The fear seeping from Cao Ren and his family was spiking through the roof. Then in a sudden violent motion, the giant lizard let out another loud hiss and charged forward. The ground shook like an earthquake as the monster landed in the midst of the Tacrids. It snapped up one of them in its massive jaws and then crunched its shell open before lifting its head to swallow it down its flexing gullet.
"Move now," I said. "Quickly."
I picked up the pace and dragged Cao Ren with me. The monster was busy feeding on what was perhaps its natural prey, and we needed to use that time to get the hell out of Dodge. "Run, Cao Ren, run!" I pushed on the speed to get as far away as possible, and to Cao Ren's credit, he managed to keep up for about a quarter mile. Then he slowed and finally dragged to a halt.
"I need to rest," he said. "I don't know how you are doing this. This world is brutal." "Let me trade places with you, father," Chu Ren said. "No, you stay there. I'll be all right. Just need a moment."
"The fates are with us,"
Su Ren said after a while.
"That monster is far behind us now, and I can see the tower ahead. There are lights."
I could see them too, perhaps just a couple miles away. It had to be the perimeter of the barrier, and it was just in time too. Already I could feel the first tingles of dark frenzy filling the air. You almost ready? I asked Kalren after another minute. He nodded.
Yes, I can manage now, I think.
I turned about to check on the giant lizard as Kalren lifted himself from the ground. It was nearly through the last of the Tacrids, leaving none of them to escape. As it downward appeared to be the last of them, it then began rooting in the ground and digging at the hole they had emerged from. And then it stopped abruptly and lifted its head high into the air. Its huge forked tongue licked the air as if sensing something. And then its head turned in our direction and it licked the air again. It lowered its head and began to charge. Oh, shit!
It's seen us!
Kalren said with a startled cry. But I knew better. It hadn't seen us. It had smelled us from downwind. And the Tacrid juice I had smeared on us was to blame. You all need to run, I shouted as I cycled my frenzy and prepared to take on the beast. The monster could probably kill me, but I was about to turn full demon soon anyway. Maybe I had a chance. I was just about to dump Kalren's family from my back when he raised a hand to me.
Don't! Kalren shouted. They'll never make it without you. That beast is too fast.
He paused as the ground trembled beneath us, the giant lizard already having covered half the distance to us in just a few seconds.
Please keep your promise, Kalren said. Protect my family, Iron Bull.
Before I could do anything else, Kalren turned and ran in the direction of the giant lizard. His wife screamed in hysterics.
Kalren, no! Father!
Loren cried.
Father!
They all bucked and jostled to climb from my back, but the struggler's resolve kept them in place as my eyes suddenly welled. I watched beside myself as Kalren changed direction, running parallel to the beast to buy us even more time. My heart ached at what I was witnessing. The demon wanted to pounce, to try and save him, to try and kill that monster, but that would simply kill us all. The giant lizard quickly reached Kalren, and with a single snap of its jaws, plucked him from the ground and swallowed him whole. My stomach lurched. Kalren's family cried out in shock and horror, and the helplessness of losing my own family flushed through my eyes. He was gone. I was beside myself, my mind still trying to comprehend his sacrifice.
Save them!
I could still hear Kalren's voice pleading in my mind.
Run!
I turned about and sprinted at full speed as Kalren's family pounded on my back in anguish and protest, urging me to turn back to save him. Their cries tore through my soul as they called out for him again and again. They didn't stop, and neither did I. In the darkness, I poured on Mark of the Beast as the first hints of the blood moon began to rise. I shielded my flame with Soul Shield and gritted my sharpening teeth as the effects took hold. Glancing over my shoulder, I could finally see that I was leaving the giant lizard far behind. The lights in the distance grew rapidly ahead of me as I closed in on them, becoming towering, flaming beacons in the darkness. As I finally ran past them, I felt the relief of the blood moon's pressure subside. I didn't stop until I saw the towering structure of Du Gok Bong looming above me, a citadel of gray stone and steel. Only then did I finally slide to a halt and release Kalren's family to fall by my side. As I dropped to my knees, their wails of anguish and loss tugged at my heart. But all I could do was weep.
Chapter 13. The familiar howls of demons and monsters filled the night as the blood moon finally emerged. It looked bigger than our moon on Earth, at least twice the size, and I wondered if the dark frenzy it produced would be just as magnified. I looked to Su-Ren and her boys. They had been crying nonstop for the last few minutes, but now they knelt together, offering prayers in silence. I gave them their privacy as a family, keeping my distance, but in my mind, I could still see Kalren making that final choice to save his family. And now I understood why. He knew I was only able to carry three of them to safety, and he had made the tough choice of sacrificing himself so that they could escape. He had not only spared their lives, but also spared them of the impossible choice of sacrificing one of their own. He was a good man, Kalren. Honest, caring, and thoughtful,
until the end. I hadn't known him for very long, but in that one instance he had taught me what the love a father had for his family truly meant, a thing I was destined to become myself one day. One day soon, perhaps. Rest in peace, Kauren, I whispered my own prayer for him. I will keep my promise to you. I then looked at his family again, as best I can. We finally got back underway, traveling the distance between the flaming beacon towers that marked the edge of the barrier and the former prison that was Du Guk Bong. In the crimson shade of the moonlight, it looked every bit a tower of despair and oppression. Standing at least 100 feet tall, bare walls dotted with the tiny, slotted windows of prison cells. An ominous monument, perhaps, indicative of the hardships we would face. But as I carried Su Ren on my back, I could only imagine the hardship she was already facing. To lose her husband like that. She hadn't said a word since, and neither had Chu Ren or Lo Ren. My heart ached for them, a new burden added to the core of my Tao. Their only crime was misfortune, and the Empire had punished them harshly for it, sending them to a hellhole like this to surely die. I added a new purpose of conviction to my promise to Kauren. I'd do my best to defy the heavens in his stead, to show the Empire that they were wrong, that the Ren family would not face demise. That got my flame and frenzy pumping. They wouldn't die on my watch. The terrain began to shift and change, moving from rocky ground to lush grass. Trees emerged in the form of orchards. Within one of them, we found some kind of citrus fruit growing that resembled lemons. We raided the trees with abandon. The fruit was bitter and tart, perhaps not yet ripe, but we tore through them anyway just to quench our thirst. Slightly refreshed, we fought the gravity and our fatigue to pass by several fields growing crops before coming to the outer courtyard of the academy itself. We headed towards an ornate gate that allowed access through a 15-foot-high wall that made up the perimeter of the courtyard. A couple of figures in dark robes stood just outside the gate, illuminated by a set of dull chi lights hanging from its top. When we got closer, I saw it was the chief instructor Yora standing there with the same two men she had shown up with before on the skiff. The man in white robes and the other in brown. She raised her brows with interest as we approached and wore a little smile on her lips.
"The last to arrive," she said. "It always interests me who serves to be the weakest of the pack."
She looked me up and down and then to Su Ren on my back.
"Did you carry her all that way?"
"He carried all three of us," Chu Ren said, "and did much more. He killed 5 of those Takrid beasts all by himself."
She squinted at me now, perhaps trying to discern my chi. I cycled my frenzy and flavored it with my devil shadow technique to ensure she could sense it. Her eyes then widened.
"I see. It is no wonder. You are high-tier Kolrealm. Whatever did you do to end up ranked with these mortals?"
The casual insult seemed to fly right past the Ren brothers and their mother. Perhaps they were used to being referred to as such. I cycled my frenzy and tapped into Struggler's resolve. "I killed a man."
"Is that all?"
she said. "It was murder. I executed him."
"A crime of passion?"
"Of justice," she scoffed.
"Isn't that what they all say?"
"The man was a pedophile,"
Su Ren said from over my shoulder.
"Oh?"
"It's true, Honorable Chief Instructor,"
Chu Ren said, bowing his head.
"The Iron Bull stopped him when he escaped the prison ship, killed him for his sins. He was known as Littlefinger from the stories told of him. It was well deserved."
"Never heard of him,"
Yora said, and then looked at me.
"So, Iron Bull is your name?"
"It is," I said. She squinted at me again, perhaps testing my chi once more.
"We will see how far you progress here, Iron Bull. I can tell you do not come from a heavy world. Even now your muscles tense under the strain. But even weak worlders like yourself can advance here, if you train hard enough.
Weak worlders? That was a new one.
I notice you already carry a phalanx glaive,
she said, craning her neck to look over my shoulder.
Curious. Do you even know how to use it?
Somewhat, I said.
Who taught you?
I shrugged. I've had several masters, but the greatest of which was perhaps the sword itself. She smiled, pleased or perhaps amused by my response, even though I was truthfully referring to Venya. I once again wished I could have brought her along for my journey instead of the lifeless hunk of corrupted steel strapped on my back. Chief Instructor Yora then turned to the man in white robes next to her.
This is Adept Tribute Yunjin,
she said.
He is Master of the First Year Tributes. He will be your instructor and overseer.
Yujin was tall and thin with a mustache and close-cropped hair. His gray eyes studied each of us intently, but he didn't say anything. Eventually, he just gave us all a nod, and we bowed in return.
Next to him is Defan,
Chief Instructor Yora said.
He is your upperclassman and will see to your needs.
We all bowed to him as well.
Congratulations to each of you on passing your first assignment. You are part of the 36 tributes who passed the trial out of over 900. You have earned the brown robes of freshman tributes. Feel honored.
Defan then handed a set of robes to each of us.
As I said earlier, you have now earned the honor of assembly with the High Marshal tomorrow morning. After that, Adept Tribute Yujin will begin your training.